The Napoleonic Era, Napoleon in Exile, 1815 to 1821. Napoleon and Arsenic, Part 1. Now, there's always been these stories that Napoleon was poisoned on St. Helena. You find that in Who Lies Here, which is a gentleman who claims that that wasn't Napoleon that died in 1821, that was a double. You have a book entitled The Murder of Napoleon. That one talks about him being poisoned. And there's all sorts of other stuff that comes up. So where does this come from? If you haven't read all the material, or even if you've just listened to all the podcasts, particularly the stuff with his last days, he'd been sick a long time. They're really talking about finishing him off to some extent. That, you know, it's not like Montholon or somebody decided 4 years ago they're going to gradually start poisoning him. You can see his gradual physical decline. And where this comes from is a Swedish doctor, Dr. Sven Forssved, believed that by reading the accounts of Napoleon's demise, that it looked obvious to him that it was arsenic poisoning. Okay, so that of course led to the examination of some of the hair. Well, Napoleon has left a lot of hair. It's very common to give hair as souvenirs, and we know that on the island of St. Helena that he had given a sample of hair as a souvenir to Betsy Balcombe in 1818 and to Captain Poppleton in 1818. But there's any number of times this has taken place. Over the years, they found, I think, 40-some different samples of his hair that had been given out at different times. Well, they did one of the samples of hair that were cut off after he had died, because there is in the will a list of people who are supposed to read this. And it supposedly came up with a very large amount of arsenic, and that indicated something else. So I'm going to go through the doctor at Glasgow. And he says, a tuft of hair claimed to be obtained from the emperor. It's been analyzed, the Department of the University of Glasgow, and the analyzation shows 10.38 ppm of arsenic in the hair. The analysis, however, did not reveal whether this arsenic was concentrated at one or more sections of the hair or evenly distributed. The finding, of course, immediately raises the question as to whether arsenic poisoning was a factor in the emperor's death. The first question that always comes up, is the hair authentic? The second one is, when was it taken from the emperor? And the third one would be, how did it reach Glasgow for analysis 140 years after his death? In connection, it appears worthy of note that some 3 years after, prior to his death, the emperor presented Captain Poppleton, who was the first orderly officer attached to Longwood, a golden snuff box with a lock of hair to celebrate the occasion of the captain's promotion to major and subsequent removal from the island. Snuff box was long preserved by the descendants of this officer, and may not the tuft of hair been likewise to appear ultimately as department in Glasgow? If so, this lock of hair was obtained too long before the emperor's death to throw any light on the actual cause of his death. So you have sometimes people say, well, he's been being poisoned over a long period of time. Well, that doesn't work, because arsenic is one of those poisons that if you take it bit by bit, you build an immunity up. We have a gentleman in the ancient world, Mithridates IV, who was one of the greatest experts on poison. And he came up with the idea that if you took little bits of poison every day, you could build an immunity to it. And he created what is called a Mithridatium, of which every day he took 22 different poisonous substances. Of course, he tested it out on prisoners in his prisons. But it worked, because when he was overthrown by his son, he tried to commit suicide with poison and was unsuccessful, had to stab himself. The Romans took that formula and reduced it down to a lower number, and it was widely used even in the Renaissance. And what we also forget is that arsenic's used in medicine all the time. So arsenic workers, people who work in mines where you find arsenic naturally, have this huge tolerance to it. So if you have to kind of be careful. So let's move on here a little bit. And I would point out that Napoleon had several doubles, and we have examples. Samples were authenticated boxes of material from people who wrote letters to their descendants that this was a lock of hair of Napoleon. When it's tested, it comes up negative, so they end up being his doubles, because he took arsenic all his life. He was scared to death of dying of what his father did was stomach cancer. So he had stomach trouble. He took a lot of that. You'll find that in a tremendous amount of medications in the 1800s. Now, arsenic is not normal, consistent in the human body, but traces of arsenic in in innocuous amounts may innocently reach the body by various agencies, natural contamination of foodstuff, water, etc. Thus, small traces of arsenic may be recovered from the human tissue in cases in which there is no question of arsenic poisoning. In consequence, harmless amounts of arsenic may be found in tissues of people who eat seafood. Also, faint traces may be found in vegetables grown in arsenically contaminated soils. Salts used to preserve food also contain traces of arsenic, especially in the old days before modern refinements. As a result, the findings have arbitrarily agree that up to 10 ppm of arsenic in human tissue is perfectly normal. Well, the reading on the hair was 10.38 from Poppleton. So it was considered not to be significant. Another explanation why traces of arsenic may have been found in the specimen of Napoleon's hair obtained at the time of his death, which is as they're preparing to bury him, is Antomarchi prescribed a number of drugs which the emperor had hated to take, and on at least five occasions shortly before his death, he was prescribed tartar emetic, which is an antimony salt. Because of their frequent occurrence together in nature, antimony salts are frequently contaminated with arsenic, and the emperor's day of such salts would have been clinically purified. Traces of arsenic in the emperor's hair may thus have been result of the medical treatment, which is what I believe. Okay, I'll get to that next time. The proof lies in the eating, and the important question is not whether faint traces of arsenic were in his hair, but whether exhibited signs of arsenic poisoning. Now, there's three ways of getting arsenic poisoning, how it manifests itself. The first one is called the algid form, in which a large dose of arsenic in a soluble form is rapidly absorbed. In these cases, there are no gastrointestinal symptoms, but a rapid circulation failure with death within a few hours, and no time for the arsenic to reach the hair. The emperor certainly did not die of this type. Second one is acute form, which arises from a single dose of arsenic. In this form, the dominating signs are those of acute gastrointestinal irritation, as evidenced by vomiting, abdominal pain, violent purging, and the collapse with death, usually within a few days, or recovery if the subject survives to a week. The emperor's final illness certainly does not fit this picture. It lasted too long, and there was no purging. The third one is subacute or to chronic form. The predominant clinical picture of this is peripheral neuritis, chiefly affecting the legs with parathesia, paresis, and rapid wasting of muscles associated with hyperkeratosis and skin pigmentation. The picture of the emperor's illness does not fit in this classical description. The clinical picture, thus, in my mind, excludes the possibility of arsenic poisoning. The only evidence to support the diagnosis is the fact that when the emperor's body was exhumed in 1840, it was noted that the body was in a remarkable state of preservation. It has been alleged that persons who die from arsenic poisoning resist putrefaction, presumably due to the antiseptic effects of arsenic on the putrefying microorganism. But that is not correct. The amount of arsenic present in the body of these cases are too small to affect the growth of bacteria. The clinical or critical experience in recent years has clearly shown that bodies of people who die from arsenic poisoning decompose just as rapidly as those who die from other causes, provided the bodies are placed under similar circumstances. It is, however, well proved that bodies buried in airtight coffins may remain remarkably well preserved for many years. The emperor's body was first placed in a soldered tin coffin, around this an inner wood coffin, then a lead coffin, and finally an outer wood coffin, and his grave was surrounded by cemented stone. There is nothing remarkable about the fact that when the coffin was opened nearly 20 years later, the body was found to be extremely well preserved. There is thus no necessity to suggest that this is due to arsenic. Despite the toxicology findings recently made, I see no evidence to indicate that the emperor died from arsenic poisoning. Now, that is the famous Glasgow pathologist's report, and it's by Dr. R. Turner. His review, it's been well checked, and a variety of other sources looked at. So, we still like to play with the arsenic. Now, I'm going to talk about some other odd things that deal with arsenic, and some things next week, but I wanted to broach this first point, that we find this, and they start talking about it, and they go crazy on it. And usually usually you have the people who are not French historians who go in with the arsenic poisoning stuff, and then you have the French who don't believe in it. I've always believed that, of course, Napoleon was dying. The medical technology at that time was not going to save him. Cancer, ulcers, whatever. But his doctors pushed him over the edge. So if you want to say that Antomarchi and some of the other people killed him, well, that's okay. I would say malpractice, so to speak. But let's look at some of the other odd things. Because there's some odd stuff with the arsenic thing that we want to look at. I'd also mention that I always give my sources. And I'm going to give the same sources here, and I'm going to add these two books, The Murder of Napoleon by Weider and Hapgood, and Who Lies Here by Thomas Wheeler. Both of these books have no sources listed in them. They're simply written. There's no footnotes. There are references to a couple of things, but there are no sources in either of the books. Most places will give you sources where they get their information, at least pathological reports. Now, the other sources I'm using, the memoirs of Louis Marchand, Napoleon at St. Helena by Dr. Stokey, Gilbert Martineau's St. Helena, and Exile by O'Meara, Le Dernier Moments de Napoleon by Antomarchi, and I was using a book, The St. Helena Story by Dame Mabel Brooks. This is a relative of the Balcombes, and that's why she was so cognizant of that.